dichotomy between understanding the truth and loving the truth. There's a correlation. If we don't understand the truth, it's going to be hard to love the truth. For example, if we don't understand the truth, we can be Dehat Mavadis. You know what Dehat Mavadis is? It's people who have the philosophy, I am the body. Or if you don't understand the philosophy, you can think you are God. It's going to affect your bhakti. If you don't understand, if you think that God is material, an illusion, it's going to affect. So there is, and I always quote that verse, Aham sarvasya prabhavo matas sarvam pavartate iti bhutva bhajanti mam buddha bhava sama. That I am the source of the material world. The wise who know this engage my devotion in devotional service. So sambandhagyan meaning metaphysical, or not you have to be a scholar, but you have to understand, as Prabhupada gave, the basic concepts of Krishna consciousness clearly. And if you understand the basic concepts of Krishna consciousness clearly, then your metaphysical knowledge, sambandha means relationship, again, when you understand how everything fits here in the world, the relationship between Krishna and Krishna's energies, when you understand that, not that you know a million verses and know a million stories, but when you... He wants to understand it. And therefore, a lot of the spiritual texts are dialectics. The teacher speaks, and then the student tries to understand. And according to his understanding, he raises a question. According to the question he raises, the teacher understands what is lacking in that student's frame of reference to understand what he said. And this may go back and forth, like the Bhagavad Gita. You know, Arjuna, I think in the fifth chapter, he still didn't understand. I remember, I think we're all indebted to Burijan, who really founded the VIHE, Vrindavan Institute for Higher Education. Before that, there was no formal study in ISKCON. So I remember at that time, and we were already doing that in Vrindavan in many ways. And I remember I was giving a course, even before the VIHE, 18 weeks, 18 chapters, the Gita. And initially, I went to Burijan's class because he had a way of, he studied deeply and had to put everything in context. And I remember very clearly one student raised his hand and said, it was the second chapter, it gets a little confusing there, a little philosophical, it's a summary of the whole thing. And the student says, I don't understand yet. And Burijan Prabhu said, don't worry, Arjuna hasn't understood yet either. And then the same question came up again and again, and also in the fifth chapter, how to understand how work can be spiritual. Because work is what? It's karma. Work is so associated with material things that the same word in Sanskrit for work is the same word for the reaction to work. They're so connected. So how to understand that? So he asked questions, and there was this dialogue. And he got the teacher was able to build up the student's frame of reference so that when this teacher spoke the truth, the student can understand the truth. You could speak the truth and not have it understood if the person doesn't have the proper background. Try going home when you begin Krishna consciousness and see your mother and tell her, you know, you're not the body. I remember in the New York Magazine in 1970, there was a picture of this Hare Krishna couple. Who are the Hare Krishnas and what are they doing in New York? And it tells the whole story of this couple. And the guy comes home, and he's a Jewish devotee, and he's married a non-Jewish devotee. He comes home to his Jewish mother, and, you know, the first question the mother asks, she doesn't care if it's in the cult, he asks, is he Jewish? Is she Jewish? And the answer was, no, Mom, she's spirit soul. And the mother said, but is she Jewish spirit soul? So he spoke the truth, right? But did the mother have the frame of reference to understand that? Of course, that's a radical disconnect. But we all have that disconnect. You know, you can have an audience, you can say the truth, and three people can have a different understanding of what you said. I remember one time, it was Prabhupada's appearance day in Vrindavan. And it's a wide variety of people in Vrindavan. So there were glorifications of Prabhupada. And it's, you know, there's not that many people in Vrindavan of the devotees at that time. They more come a little bit later. So Gopi Pranadana is sitting with Bhurijan, and they're listening to it. And then, you know, maybe like Hari Sari came and spoke and glorified Prabhupada, maybe as the corporate head of ISKCON. And then Iyengar spoke, and Prabhupada, Manjari, and then someone spoke, you know, and this one and that one. And they kind of looked at each other and they said, are they speaking about the same person? Same person, different conceptions, different ideas. So you have to go deep. And sometimes to go deeply, then a philosophical point has to be put almost in a counterintuitive place to understand it a little deeper. And that's what's happening here. Of course, there's this story. He's hearing about Dhritarashtra, who's a great devotee. So now he really wants to understand. I mean, this is counterintuitive. Here it is. The greatest devotee is a demon. How do you understand that? You have to go deeper to understand how those two things can come together. Just one time I was walking, about 20 years ago, on 59th Street, the beginning of Central Park. And this guy, well-dressed guy, ran up. I didn't know he was a fundamental Christian at the time. And he looked at me and he said, you want to know who your Krishna is? And then he quoted the Bhagavad Gita. He said, of demons I am Pallad. He's a demon. So counterintuitive. Now, if you can understand how a devotee can be a demon, you really understand what bhakti is. And this is there in the Gita. I think the whole Gita starts for that reason, why Krishna has, well, he's made it a war for one reason, because then everybody's going to listen to the philosophy. Everyone likes a fight. I remember when I was young and I used to go to Manhattan Beach in Brooklyn, the greatest thing is when someone says, fight, 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 and the whole beach starts to run to one side. So that's the Bhagavad Gita. Fight, fight, fight. And everyone is coming to listen. But at the same point, what is the point? That this is spiritual. And Arjuna, he couldn't understand it. So if you can understand how that is spiritual, you will understand what is spiritual. I think paradoxes help us understand something deeply. Like the most famous paradox is water, water everywhere, but not a drop to drink. So you have to understand pani tattva. You have to understand water tattva. You have to understand the tattva of water. That it can, other things can mix with it. So you have to understand it deeply. So here, that's what's happening here. You have to understand this deeply. And how is it going to be brought out right now, it's Maharaj Prickett is highlighting the point, because even the topmost jnanis don't necessarily become devotees. And he's describing this progression. So how can a demon be a devotee? The topmost. Okay, give me two verses that bhakti is at the apex of jnana. From Gita. Samahatma bahunam many janmanam ante yanavamam papajyate vasudeva savam samahatma. The greatest mahatma, after being jnani for many, many, many years. And there's another famous one in the Gita. Brahma bhuta pasanatma na sochati na kanchati samasarvesha mad bhakta. You become a bhakta when Brahma bhuta, liberated platform. Brahma bhuta pasanatma, completely peaceful. Brahma bhuta pasanatma, nasochati, no more hankering, no more lamenting. Sama sarveshu bhuteshu. And you see everyone equal. Mad bhakta labhati. Then you attain bhakti. Right? And here's a demon. And he's a devotee. So reconcile that now. And if you reconcile that, then you'll understand what is bhakti. And when you reconcile it, don't become confused either. And don't think it's not important to have some gyan. Or it's not important to... It's anyway, I think what's going to be made is there's not an absolute correlation between bhakti and jnana. There's not an absolute correlation. There's not an absolute correlation between the external and the internal. Not an absolute correlation. Of course, it's a different sukriti. But there's other things that you have to reconcile. So now come to that point. There's not an absolute correlation between bhakti and jnana. Then you get verses in the Chaitanya Charitamrita where it says the symptom of the devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is that they're renounced from the world. Does anybody know that book, that verse? Mahaprabhu, Bhakta Ganera, something like that? Okay, we have the Akashvanis, the unembodied voices coming from the demigods. So you have to reconcile these things. Otherwise, you're not going to understand the truth. And if you don't understand the truth, you won't be able to perfectly live by the truth. It doesn't mean scholarship. One time I used to organize an academic conference. I did this for 10 or maybe 10 years, at least 10 years. We had these groups of brahmacharis that were intellectuals, and they were leaving the brahmachari ashram. They were going into the academy, the university, and I just put them all together just to keep a camaraderie with them and maybe make sure they have a right vision. Many have become professors now in many, many different places. There's professors from, still in contact. We had this gathering. And I remember one person, and he gave a presentation. And we had more or less younger devotees, but there were only three senior devotees there. Myself, Jayadvaita Swami, and Pradyumna. And I remember, some person was making this presentation that, gurus have to be like, theologians. They have to be theologians. And then kind of indicating like, you know, that Prabhupada wasn't such a scholar, something like that. And I was getting upset. But Pradyumna said, which is very interesting, he said, no, you don't understand. It's not that a guru has to be a theologian, but he has to have a firm understanding of Sambandhagyan. The basic of the philosophy has to know deeply. And he said, therefore, in Prabhupada's books, you'll see how clearly he presents the metaphysics of Krishna consciousness, that you're not the body, not just theoretically, so you can hear it and realize it. That the soul, that we're different from God, we're the servants of God, we're not God. Deeply understand that. You found the verse? No? You were looking for that? I want to hear it. Is that?
Principle sustaining the lies of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's devotees. Saying this renunciation, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Gaya, is extremely satisfied.
So you see, then you have. Let me read it here, if I can do it. Wow, I have 10 minutes now to sum up. It's just. Renunciation is the basic principle sustaining the lives of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's devotees. Seeing this renunciation, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is extremely satisfied. So, all these things, you have to put them together. And that, now I need a drum roll to put them together like in 5 minutes before the class ends. But, and I speak tomorrow, so I can continue it. But it's like this, is bhakti sukriti is different than jnana sukriti. They're not a correlation. You can't just judge a person's advancement in Krishna consciousness by his renunciation alone. Although I can think of another verse which hints that you can. Bhakti Pareshanu Bhava Bhaktir said that these things go together, right? Devotion, detachment from the material world, and realization. Just as one's eating, he gets satisfaction, the hunger and pain goes, and he gets relish at the same time. So there's a correlation, but it's not an absolute correlation. And I'll give you, I mean, and I've seen that so many times, that people don't have necessarily jnana sukriti, but they have bhakti sukriti. And you see someone with jnana sukriti, but they don't have bhakti sukriti. An impersonalist can come in. I've seen this once in Vrindavan. There was one god brother of mine, and he had mental problems. He even got money from the government that he never had to work in his life. But every month, he would give that check to Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, I don't know how he loves me so much. And I remember he really couldn't control his mind. And I remember sometimes I'd go into the temple and he'd be selling Mahaprasad and also eating Mahaprasad. And sometimes he'd be chanting his Gayatri and I'd go for the noon artik. He was so sincere, I'd leave 45 minutes later and he was still on his Gayatri, trying to control his mind. And then a South Indian Brahmin came, and he sat up very straight. You know, he was a writer for the Times of India. He was a master yogi. He was a philosopher. He had complete control. And he would sit up straight. A lot of jnana sukriti, a lot of karma sukriti. But then he left. And that person who's 80 years old, now he's 80 years old, he lives in Vrindavan, retired to Vrindavan, and he's still distributing Prabhupada's books. Or I could say right now, you know, in terms of our own bhajan, our own chanting of Hare Krishna, if you concentrate, And you go deeper, and you go deeper, and you're, you know, you're steady, and you're regulated. You'll come to a point that the voice in your heart, which is really what is your love for Krishna, which Krishna hears and gets pleasure from, not just the sound, but the way in which it is said, like Bhakti Siddhanta said, we should be heart deep, not just lip deep. The voice in your heart will be stunted to the degree that you lack surrender. There'll be a point where you can't go any further in your voice because there's things you're attached to that you can't give up. And when I say it's not everything, because some of our attachments we do use in Krishna's service. It's not that you're a parent, you go deeper, and now I should not love my child. But there are certain attachments, and somehow we kind of know what they are. And they come down to the heart, and so let's say that you're real sincere, and that today you surrender fully. It actually somehow comes to that point. I'm doing it. Whatever Krishna wants, I will do. And I'm whatever Guru says, wants, Guru and Krishna says, I will do. It doesn't mean I have to leave my family, but it means I have to stop this. It doesn't mean I have to stop this. It doesn't mean that, but I have to accept this. And you go into your heart and let's say that person surrenders. He's a Mahatma. Now, externally, do you think the next day his whole behavior is going to be completely different, including the little things in that person's false ego that happen to clash with that part of your brain that disgusts you? You think it's going to change overnight, but what is that person's status who actually has done that? Who has actually surrendered to Krishna and went into his heart. Even though there may still be his Jnana Sukriti, it may not be so elevated, his Karma Sukriti may not be so elevated, but somehow his Bhakti Sukriti, he's come to that point of surrender. But at the same time, and this is the point, if you come to that point, then very, very quickly, everything else will come also. I've always tried to figure this out. As some of you know, I wrote a commentary on the Nectar of Devotion, and there's one point that comes out you have to reconcile. One, that generally, Prabhupada, he does talk a lot that, you know, without coming to a Nartana Vritti, you really can't come to Ragmarg. Now you have to be free of an artist. But you look in the commentaries, you can come at any point to Ragmarg. If you meet a very powerful devotee whose devotion in his heart enthuses you. So I just said, well, how do you reconcile that? Because in one sense, you see that people who do all nonsense, they have no room in their mind for Krishna. You see that. But again, it's not an absolute correlation. You know, that. But the way it's reconciled, I found another verse which says that when one does have spontaneous devotion in his life, then very quickly he becomes renounced from the world and everything else comes. So it's unlikely you're going to see this great Rasika Bhakta who's an absolute, you know, whatever. So so here, this is what's going to be resolved. And it's going to be resolved by Sukadeva Goswami telling the story of who Vritrasura is, and basically what his Bhakti Sukriti was. even though in this life, the Gyanu Sukriti, he was born as a demon. There's another Sukriti, his Bhakti Sukriti. And I think the important point, the important thing of this point is you really have to appreciate devotees and not just look at the externals as the absolute correlation for how you're going to judge them. You may be an Indian, you may judge birth. Oh, he's a Brahmin. Prabhupada was not born in a Brahmin family. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was not born in a Brahmin family. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was not born in a Brahmin family. Gaurakishore Das Babaji was not born in a Brahmin family. So you look at things externally, but the same sense, being born in a Brahmin family, Gita, Suchinam Srimatam Gehe, Yoga Brashta Vijayate. If you're a fallen advanced yogi, you get born in an aristocratic family or Brahmin family. They're not absolute correlations. And I've seen devotees with mental problems that are great devotees. Really great devotees. That they give everything to Krishna, but they have these obstacles in their mind. I was always thinking, but anyway, I'm not going to think anymore. Because then there's no more time. But I speak tomorrow, and it's going to continue this subject. And what's wonderful about tomorrow is Prabhupada has a huge purport. Therefore, I'll chant Hare Krishna less at the beginning and read it, where he discusses these points. So, any questions? Jai, any questions? No? Reflections?
We have an institution.
Yeah.
And in an institution, there has to be standards.
Yeah.
And those standards often complicate this sort of point in terms of when we're looking at the devotees, we judge according to those standards, which is reasonable. But then I often wonder if there would be room for like a Gaurakishore Das Babaji in our family today, or even a Nityananda Prabhu for that matter, who was quite far out. I don't know if there's room for Nityananda Prabhu in the Hare Krishna movement that we're accustomed to, because we have certain standards that we, which is reasonable to follow.
Yeah.
We do make a judgment call. So sometimes it's hard to on a practice level, it's hard to reconcile our standards with these sorts of messages or these sorts of personalities or scenarios.
Yeah, you know, Prabhupada answered that in one sense when Bhurijan Prabhu asked him, you know, how do you understand the difference between a principle and a detail? Right? In Krishna consciousness. What's like a principle? And what's a detail? And Prabhupada's answer was very good. It takes intelligence. So, you know, so I think that's why, you know, people have to study the books from different angles. There has to be a class of Brahmins who know the subtlety of the philosophy, who are not ideological, you know, conservatives. They're not ideological liberals, you know. That they actually are independent and look at the philosophy in different angles and can resolve the apparent contradictions. I just was speaking to, I have a disciple in Vrindavan, and she told me that she went to, you know, Radhakund. Someone brought her to Radhakund, and she listened to this one devotee, you know, and Chandi said, well, what do you think? And I knew the person. Right? He's not institutional, but he's really advanced. And he's, you know, and I think he's an ISKCON devotee. You know, I think in his heart, I don't think he has any animus towards it. You know, he just decided to live the rest of his life, and he's very, very humble. You know, so I think there is room. And I see sometimes somebody, maybe a GBC who's his friend or knows him, but he's humble, he's not like. So I think there is room, you know. I have another god brother who's kind of, I think he's still loyal and dedicated to Prabhupada. And he's a complete renunciate. His name is Parvat Maharaj. I don't know if you know him. Yeah, he was a book distributor and things like that. But, you know, his nature is he's not a preacher. He's not like that at all. And I see, you know, people know him. Vaisheshabhru knows him. You know, they're still friends. And I see him sometime. So I think, you know, when you have that depth and understanding and maturity, you know, you can understand both, right? That, hey, I really appreciate the people who attend the programs. There's something really glorious about people who strictly attend the programs. You know, there's something wonderful about that. It's such an absorption in Krishna consciousness. Like, what a sadhana. You say, here, you start at 5 in the morning, you go to 9 o'clock. That's 4 hours of just absorption. You know, so it's something, and Prabhupada wanted it. I'm trying now to come up to the standard, too. I started actually, you know, attending the program. I have so many other ideas. I mean, chanting, writing, and things, but there's something to it. You know, and there's something to, you know, people who, you know, maybe don't as strictly. And then it depends on the attitude of the person. It could be Niyama Agraha, too much attachment to it. It could be Niyama Agraha. It's such a subtlety. We'll end there. I overtook my time. Srila Prabhupada Ki.